expand it, grow it. I mean, the shluchim who have been able to cultivate their own children and bring their own children out to help them. They come with new young energy and new young this, and they expand the work many times over. I mean, those guys you capitalize on your investment. I mean, your success in the long term ends up being far, far greater when you have your priorities straight. But again, some people, even in shlichus, get caught up in the parnasa aspect, in the fundraising and paying the bills, and they get caught up in that and they forget what their priorities are. But there are kids growing up. There are kids growing up. And the same thing in Crown Heights. I mean, this kid's growing up with a lot of... So many kids will tell me, like, okay, the Rebbe says that you can't eat the chal of stam. But Rav Moshe Feinstein says you can. What do you answer, kid who says? Where am I supposed to argue with him? Supposed to argue now, who's bigger than ever? What am I to do? The kid grew up in a Lubavitcher house and he could say that to me. I have no words for him. The Rebbe says, what do you mean? Actually, he was a great person. He was a great person. The Rebbe would see, even the Rebbe sent childless to him sometimes. Can't call it trade. What am I supposed to say? I have nothing to say. All I can say is, The Rebbe! But if they don't feel that, then it's meaningless argument. They feel like, okay, the Rebbe said. So where do they pick up that attitude? Okay, so the Rebbe said. They pick up that attitude in an environment where the Rebbe said is something which is greeted as a burden, as something to try to get out from under, something which has negative consequences, or something which is unpleasant, or something which is burdensome. Or if you grow up in an environment where the words that Rebbe said is like, the Rebbe said, it's greeted with enthusiasm and excitement and a koch, the Rebbe said, and those three words, the Rebbe said, are the guiding light and that illuminate and bring a sense of pleasure and enthusiasm and excitement and good fortune into a family environment. The Rebbe said. But then the kids respond to, oh, the Rebbe said. Somebody told me that he was talking to a kid who goes to a yeshiva in which there's very strong sentiment against the rabbanim of this community. So he told me that this kid was like saying, oh, did you see the latest thing they put out against the Rabbanim? He said, no. But he asked the kid, did you see the sikha that the Rebbe said about the Rabbanim? He said, nah. He said, no, I never saw the sikha, but did you see the new dirt that they came out with against the Rabbanim? Does it come from the Rebbe? So he's, I know what the I know what the Rebbe said. The kid wasn't interested. It meant nothing to him. He's a chassid shabbach. He's a chassid yeshiva. They learned, they dive into this. But the words that Rebbe said didn't weigh in against the whoever their political ideological leader may be. The words that Rebbe said didn't like throw the kid. For it, like, he didn't miss a beat. Okay, so the Rebbe said a sikh about that. Yeah, but who cares? You know what the latest dirt is? I'm sitting with a kid. A bacha was like trying to explain to me how the Rabbanim are like bought and paid for. So I said to him, I said, ah, fortunate is the generation that the teenage Bachram are smarter than the Nasi Adeh. What a generation we live in. Teenage Bachram have a better take on reality than the Nasi Adeh. It's an amazing time we live in. He's like, I said, the Rebbe said that when Rabbanim are elected by a whole tzibur, so they can't be bought off. So the Rebbe says, because they're answerable to the whole tzibur. And everybody voted. Everybody pays, is supposed to be at least paying in towards theirs. So they're equally indebted to everybody. Nobody has any more investment in them than anybody else. I mean, unless God forbid they take bribery. You're not saying they take bribery, you're saying that the community council signs the check, the radical signs the check, so the radical doesn't sign the check from their pocket. They don't have money. They sign it, the check goes through their account, but it's the community's money. So you didn't, so the Rebbe didn't figure this out, that the Rabbanim, you figured out what the Rebbe couldn't figure out. You figured out that the Rabbanim could be bought and paid for, and just for a paycheck, they'll say whatever one particular group of people, and the Rebbe Mamish wasn't on the ball. And the Rebbe didn't have the smarts enough to figure it out. It's unbelievable. So he was like, but I got a little more agitated. Now I'm saying it more coolly and calmly. At the time I got a little more agitated, so he used the excuse of the fact that I was screaming to end the conversation. Oh, I can't talk to someone who screams. He walks away. But I'm saying, you know, it's the sheer idiocy, the sheer insanity of what these people are saying, I mean, was like lost on the kid. He didn't get it. I mean, it felt like I like rubbed his face in it. He didn't get it. And it's a good kid, he's a good Chassidus Shabbat that learns Davins, those Mitzrayim, Chassidus Shabbat. He doesn't get it. That, what do you mean, Dreykov? But they never said that they don't know. The kids who live with the Rebbe said are amazing. Both the ones from here and both, and you see the ones that come from Eretz Yisrael. From Eretz Yisrael, they have an advantage. They're used to only getting what the Rebbe said. Their relationship was they lived more on what the Rebbe said. They got up at 5 o'clock in the morning to hear the Rebbe Fabreng here at 10 o'clock in the evening in New York. They got up 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning to sit and hear what the Rebbe said. And that's what they lived with. That's what they got with. What did the Rebbe say? Yeah. While the Rebbe talked, everyone slept. They kocht sich with the Rebbe making the design, and the Rebbe making this. They kocht sich with the kiruvim of the Rebbe, not as much in what the Rebbe said. So they say, oh, listen, these kids, they don't see the Rebbe, they don't interact with the Rebbe, they don't this with the Rebbe, so they don't have a relationship with the Rebbe. It's not true. If your relationship with the Rebbe is on what the Rebbe said, so the kids who are, so in Eretz Yisrael, that was their relationship with the Rebbe, their kids have the same relationship. They have the same video screen, they have the same telephone, they have the same, all the same equipment that you used to get what the Rebbe, and they have the same printed matter, the same equipment that you used to get what the Rebbe said, they're still getting what the Rebbe said. But the people who, what the Rebbe said, they tuned out. They only came for the excitement and the Rebbe made with his hands and jumped up and down. So her, never, the kids, you know, were standing and looking at the Rebbe by Davening, and said, whatever it is, that the kids don't have. That's very true. Kids don't have it. So it depends, you know, and it depends what you live with, it depends what you cook. But the parent, you know, people who their home is and their environment is the Rebbe said. So the kids don't even feel deprived. Kids don't feel deprived. Kids who grow up, you know, as kids who grow up, where the Rebbe said is like this ominous, you know, it's an introduction to the hatchet being about to fall, the words that Rebbe said. So, they're not too excited when they hear those words. When they hear those words, it arouses in them resentment, anger, defensiveness, whatever the negative emotion of the day. But kids who get the same words that Rebbe says with a tzach, with an excitement, with enthusiasm. So you'll see, you know, so and you see, I see it in the parents all the time. I can tell you when I hear, you know, when my wife will talk to some lady about not having things with not kosher animals. Books, clothes, all kinds of things, you know, and they'll start scratching. Yeah, but yeah, it's not so practical. There, you can't buy a pair of, for children, all the stretchies and all this. It's all has animals. The kids want to have anything to read, and then they did it. When they're sitting and coming up with all the reasons why they don't like that idea from the Rebbe, that's it. So I expect their kids to be the same.
What was that hurrah?
Not to expose children to anything with not kosher animals.
Oh.
I mean, unless it's directly related, like that's not a problem with going to the zoo. It's not a problem if there's a lesson in it to see the wonders of creation. To see the, that's not a problem. The problem is it's just like a design. It's just like entertainment. That's a problem. So I see the parents from Hasidus. Not so practical. So to those kids, I know what that, you know, those people who treat the Rebbe said as a burden, you know, the kids get the message. So the Rebbe said that, and then you see families where the kids themselves will come and say, "Oh, mommy, that book's not for us. It has not kosher on." So when I see that, and I've seen that, I say, well, that's a kid who's growing up in a home where the words that ever said is something, is a badge of honor. That we're sitting, that ever, we're connected, that ever said. So, you know, I've seen all sides of the, of how people relate to what the Rebbe said. And I'm not telling you that it has to be a home where they perfectly follow every single hero of the Rebbe and they don't deviate one iota. We're talking about human beings with human frailties and yetzaharas, and we're not talking about that, you know, you can only engender in your children a respect for the Rebbe if you're 100% consistent. And that's not what we're saying. I mean, obviously that would be optimum and ideal, but it's not, it's not going to make or break what you communicate to your children. I mean, if it's out and out rank hypocrisy, I mean, obviously the kids will pick up on that. But if it's, you know, if your loyalties are in the right place and your priorities are in the right place, even if you don't necessarily always live up to the standard, the fact is your kids will embrace and respect those standards and hopefully live up to them better than you do.
I have two questions for you. One, you had spoken about Baal Tshuvas before as typically not having your standard from role model in growing up. And I have two questions. First of all, I'm curious whether, or at least what percentage of Frum families, I mean, everybody who came here saw a certain number of some families who obviously did represent a good role model. But I wonder what percentage of the Frum families really do represent a good role model, number one. And number two, what course of action would you recommend taking for kids when the parents, in fact, don't have this role model and still have to do, I mean, what kind of practical suggestions would you implement or would you recommend to deal with it? So those are two separate questions. The first is more or less curiosity. The second one is a very practical one.
See, I'm working on, I wish I could develop a course for young people. In workshops, in which the title of the workshop will be Re-Educating Your Parents. I think that's a theme I've touched on before. And the fact is that, you know, when I have sat with young people and have showed them that you can love your parents, okay, that, you know, as most kids see, are torn between loving and approving of their parents or hating and condemning their parents. That's where most kids see their options lying, since they have feelings on both ends and extremes of the spectrum. Basically, what they end up is with just a hostile mush of emotion, and you know, and things deteriorate from there. What children need to learn is, if somebody would have access to them and could teach them, is that your parents are more likely than not, they're more likely to be zhlubs than to be malicious. Okay? In other words, they're more likely inept and incompetent, although well-meaning, rather than malicious and spiteful. So therefore, what you could have for your parents is you can disapprove of certain practices that your parents adopted, and while at the same time feeling love and compassion for the fact that they are schlubs. Okay. So you can be compassionate towards your parents, love them, respect their qualities, and at the same time be able to get a level of objectivity where you can disapprove of certain decisions and choices that they make. And you can do that from a more compassionate and objective position, and therefore not be emotionally invested into their frailties and weaknesses to the point that you have to become condemning and hostile and angry and rageful and whatever it is, or even vengeful and rebellious. And you can, once you could find the happy medium, which between Chesed and Gvura is Teferis, when you can find the happy medium of compassion, realizing that they're just not holding up too well under the burden of their responsibilities, for whatever reason that may be, and that is probably the source of their ineptitude. If you could, and which is actually in today's Tanya, that compassion will arouse love and cancel out any anger, resentment, or even hatred. So when I can sit with a kid, but so far any success I've had in the area has only been on an individual basis, and I can sit with a kid and get them into a place of compassion for their parents, then they can actually love and appreciate the things about their parents that are lovable and worth appreciating, and even admire their fortitude in trying to make the best out of a messy situation. And what happens is the anger dissipates. The anger, instead of, you know, all the psychologists and psychiatrists trying to redirect the anger, to either validate the anger or invalidate the anger or redirect the anger or whatever it is, the fact is that Chassidus teaches us that harachmanus meireres asa'avim vatelus asa'sina, that if you have compassion and you develop an appreciation for the difficulties of raising a family when you yourself don't have parental support, whatever the situation was, or trying to raise a family while struggling with parnasa and large families. So it's interesting enough that the individual kids that I've worked with through these issues, which are a handful, have come to the conclusion that some of them came angry at the Rebbe for wanting people to have large families, and they came with a lot of anger and resentment towards other things as well. And when they were able to get some kind of, objective compassion, they were able to, it actually bolstered their own confidence in being able to take on a similar situation and to be able to navigate it well. In other words, it's not like
they would become parents.
In other words, that they would look forward to the time when they would become parents. And I have, I mean, again, I told you, it's only a handful of people, because I deal with many different kids and many different issues. And I don't, but it's something that I would love to do, like, you know, a workshop with teenagers on this idea of, you know, understanding how you could actually have Avos Yisrael for your parents too. And to teach the parents how to have Avos Yisrael for their wives and children, for their spouses and children, whatever it is, with the start with old fuddy-duddies, re-educating them, you know, through an educational process is hard. But if the kids introduce the element of Avos Yisrael into the home, then actually it has a trickle-up effect. And the parents actually... the parents will actually start mellowing and becoming less intransigent and become whatever. It's very interesting, fascinating. It works. You can actually restructure a family milmata lamaila. It's amazing. Which is what this period is all about. Right? Milmata lamaila. The Rebbe is invisible, and we have to do everything milmata lamaila. From downward up. So it's really, really amazing to watch. You know, it's when a kid chops it and gets it. You know, sometimes when a kid chops it and gets it and implements it, they come back like totally amazed at the results.
How do you get them to chop it in?
Right? I haven't really had many situations like this, but right now I have one person that I'm working with that I'm using this person to re-educate all the kids. That's a large family, the kids, the parents, and the parents' therapists. So, and it's all as a milmata lamaila.
He's the youngest?
No, perhaps not the youngest, but it's all milmata lamaila. It's all, you know, setting him up, not, you know, coming in and saying, this is what the Rebbe said, and you better do it or else. Working on it. It's an amazing, I mean, I'm watching this kid do it, and I'm totally in awe of their capacity. I mean, it's an amazing thing to watch. It's mamish redefining all the family roles and all, it's an amazing thing. It's totally amazing. But I'm saying I had developed a lot of it on my own when I made the transition from teenager to young adult. So I kind of developed these things and employed them in practice in my own family life. But once I learned Chassidus, I really got a much clearer vision of what it needs and how it would work. So this person is like the first one that like really is in a situation where they're home. They're in the home all the time, you know, on a regular basis, and it's like amazing. It's an amazing thing. It's still in process, but it's worth writing up as a case history one day. It's an amazing thing. You can write a book just on this family. You just have to change enough identifying features that everyone should be saying, it's the other guy. But it's amazing. And mom is, you know, it's like a scientist seeing an experiment like work. It's an amazing thing. But anyway. So, you know, after you come up with all the ideas and all that is, all that, you know, and you have some experience with it, but then you see, man, with someone putting it into practice.
That doesn't necessarily help us in a practical. Is there something more practical?
No, we should send our kids to him. That's very practical.
and then if they'll agree to come.
And then they'll help then they'll help us.
If they'll agree to come.
No, I mean, I'm serious. I'm really serious. I mean, I mean, you're right. Well, they agreed to come, but...
They agreed to come, and they're willing to discuss the issues. This was a person who was in an extremely vulnerable position at the time when they came to me, and they were actually... You know, actually to the point where they've been given psychiatric drugs and things. I mean, they're in a really vulnerable position, just like put out everything, like, you know...
Mm-hmm.
All the things that, which any normal psychologist would do, was take the kind of stuff that this kid laid out on the table for me, and try to show them that they have a right to be angry and resentful and hate their parents, and not to let the things that their parents saddled them with. That part of their revenge has to be, there's no sweeter revenge than living right. Don't let them destroy your life. That's the traditional model is, getting out all the anger and hatred towards the parents, but don't let them mess up your life. You know, you prove that you can live a good life anyway, despite all the terrible things they did to you. That's kind of the model that a lot of psychologists are. And it says... I took it in a totally different direction, and I showed how I showed where the parents are making the mistake. It's what the parents are doing wrong. What the mistake comes from, and how Avos Yisrael is the answer. Avos Yisrael is making space for the other person, anticipating the other person, rather than trying to get your needs met. And, you know, coming to the table with what you want and what you need, obviously Israel is stepping aside and saying, okay, what do you want? What do you need? And I can't get into the whole thing right now, but by shifting a lot of the interactions, what happens is that... people respond very differently than when faced with confrontation. I want this, yeah, but I want that. Yeah, but I want this. Yeah,
so
but I want that.
So theoretically, any person that could do that. Now,
yeah, anyway.
We could do that.
Right. Ultimately, all human relationships, if they're based on Avos Yisrael, is so everyone comes out on top. But what happens is a lot teaching new tricks to old dogs has the problem that old dogs don't necessarily buy it. Yeah, right. Yeah, if I'll be nice to her, then she'll be nice to me. Yeah, right. Haven't I heard that before? You know what I mean? So you know, it's hard to, like, people who have, like, certain models. People have certain entrenched models of how they view the world. So it's, like, hard for them to actually, you know,
kids are much
step out of their old to make a paradigm shift, shall we say. So the more entrenched people are, the harder it is for them to. The younger people, they're looking for something. I mean, they're looking for, they want it to work. They want it to, well, you know, they want it to work. They want it to be good. They want it to be, but they just, you know, they're just eaten up by, you know, pain and hurt and frustration and anger and all kinds of other things. But if you could actually get the persons in the right frame of mind, that's, you know, you got them in the right time, the right spot, they're ready to hear, then no, there's really a way to make it work. And this is how you do it. It works.
Mm-hmm. How about the other question about the from families?
From families is like this. What happens is like this. You have to realize that when society is in a state of dysfunction, it seeps into the from world as well. So that's one problem. So that's on the negative. On the positive, some of the families that you consider dysfunctional, that you look at them and say, what a horrible marriage, I wouldn't want my family to be like that. They still actually have the power of traditional roles. And their kids will do better. Some of their kids will copy, but some of them will actually do better. Because since they at least have the traditional roles are in place, so they can look at it, it's easier for a kid to look and say, when the roles are clearly defined, except that they're handled badly. So it's much easier for a kid to say, okay, I know what the roles are, but my parents handled it badly, I'm going to handle it right. But he knows what the roles are. His question is not what the roles are. When a kid grows up in a family where the roles are just totally confused, and who does what, and who does where, and who says what, and who says, he just doesn't know, what am I supposed to do? Forget about doing it right. I don't even know what I'm supposed to do. So what happens is in traditional from families with terrible marriages, so you could have a lot of their kids have wonderful marriages because they did have a classic. The role definitions were very, were very clearly defined. They just performed them badly and whatever, and it was, didn't get along. But those who have absolutely no sense of who's what and what is where and what's a man and what's a woman and who does what, and half of their ideas are mixed in with Hollywood and who knows what, they have all kinds of. But again, the from homes that have the more secular influences in the from home, the more the confusion seeps in and affects the from homes as well. But I know in my parents' generation, I know almost every husband and wife in my parents' generation that I knew the roles were classical roles. And some did it badly and some did it well. But, and not even, just to give you an example of how you could still learn a lot from people who do the classical roles badly. I know women who verbally abuse their husbands terribly. From my parents' generation, I knew women who would scream at the guy and curse the guy and put the guy down. But do you know what would happen if somebody else said something negative about their husband? Well, they tear you out of. They kill you. If you said to that wife, you figure, hey, she's always knocking her husband, right? So you figure, yeah, your husband, Taki's a jerk. My husband? What are you talking about? My husband is a Talmud Chacham. You know what my husband is? In other words, the classical role, the wife was a wife. It just had a problem with the guy actually putting it into practice. But internally, in other words, she knew she was tremendously, the same women who would totally berate and abuse and knock their husbands, if you said something or if you did anything to impugn the honor of their husband, they'd come after you. Now you have spouses sitting with other people and knocking their spouse. And now you can go to spouses and say, hey, your husband's a jerk. Yeah, boy, you ain't kidding, he's a jerk. You think he... So in other words, because the roles are so confused, this couple that I'm describing, they had a very, very deep relationship, which wasn't particularly pleasant, but it went very, very deep. And if you said a word to this wife, and I know what I want, you'd say a word to the wife about the husband, or if somebody did anything in any way to demean or dishonor her husband, she'd tear his head off. She'd be furious like a lioness. So, and that you don't see that today. Where a lot of the younger, you just don't see it as much as you should. Or the same thing, a husband. The idea that, I actually heard this once on a tape from Manus Friedman years ago, but it struck a chord. The idea that if people will introduce people outside the marriage to take sides, there was always a sense, even when people were cats and dogs, that to the outside there's a united front. Even if we haven't gotten it together inside, but to the outside there's a united front. There's no such thing as bad-mouthing your spouse to somebody outside. Or letting someone outside badmouth your spouse. There's no such thing. Because it's like, whoa, that's my wife you're talking about. You know, or that's my husband you're talking about. So, there was, so sometimes I'll see in from families, really, you know, even in dysfunctional situations, or even not so bad, you know, mediocre or whatever, but the kids know what a father is, what a mother is, what a husband is, what a wife is. They just know that their particular set that they were blessed with didn't get it quite right. But when you have the situations where kids just don't know, what does a father do, what does a mother do, what does a husband do, what does a wife do, what does a, who does what does who, where, when, how, what does work, what are you supposed to do? They have no clue.
Obviously, the
and by the way, and the same thing is with general chinuch. A kid that feels that they're part of a, there's no question that a kid who feels like he's part of a chain has an advantage over a kid who doesn't feel like he's part of a chain. And therefore, parents who their own parents live a lifestyle which is not consistent with what they want their children to live. But Bobby and Zaidi have to be supervised. So you have to put in 10 times more effort. Not 10 times more screaming and punishments, that's not what we're talking about. Put in 10 times more effort and 10 times more positivity into your kids so that they look at your lifestyle and they look at Bobby and Zaidi's lifestyle and they say, what's the question? No contest. Okay, because they ultimately have to choose between your lifestyle and Bobby and Zaidi's lifestyle. But a kid who grows up with your lifestyle is the same as Bobby and Zaidi's, and you sit around and recall fondly memories of Alta Bobby's and Alta Zaidi's and Alta Bobby's and Alta and grandfather on this side and the great grandfather on that side. So they feel they're part of a chain, they're part of a tradition, they're part of a something. So they're not question by them. It's much less an issue of choosing. They're not choosing if they're going to be a part of the chain because they are a part of the chain. The question is how much they're going to be. You know, how much of it they're going to exemplify and actualize in their lives. But they still feel like they're part of it.
It's also what they call gezer.
Okay, that's it has some power to it. Friedrich Rebbe talks a lot about that. It has a power. Gezer has a power.
What's that?
Gezer means bark of a tree.
A trunk, I don't know.
Trunk,
where you
bark.
Come from.
It's actually a gezer. But it's an expression that people who are descendants of generations of Chassidim. One of the things that Alter Rebbe promised Chassidim is that that their avodah will impact not only themselves but for generations. It says that when Chassidim heard that, they were overjoyed and they went out and they were dancing and celebrating for days after Alter Rebbe told them that their avodah will, it's not only for themselves but it's going to. So in many ways we're all the children of those Chassidim. Anyone who becomes a Chassid today in some ways is the spiritual heir of those Chassidim. But certainly having their blood flowing in your veins is an advantage. But again, it's like anything else. Either you use it or you don't. I mean, you utilize it and incorporate it, you know, and ultimately try to expand on it, or you don't. But the Friedrich Rebbe describes them, the Chassidim heard that, they were ecstatic. That even if you don't see the fruits of your labors in yourself, but it'll come out in your children and your grandchildren for all generations, they were like. Because, you know, sometimes you're learning, you're davening, you're this and that, you know, I'm still the same old one, same schmuck I was before, you know what I mean? You don't feel like.
That's the fruits of your labor. That's it's where.
Right.
Where this Eved Elokim, you're talking about Eved Elokim, so this is the fruits. these are the fruits, because it's labor. That's the
yeah.
That's the avoda. Where you're only resting on that this will this will carry you through. Okay, so I guess it's just what we're talking about here. This is we're talking about work.
So but again, the Zoroastrians, they have advantages. They don't necessarily capitalize on those advantages. But so I'm saying, if you want, if you don't have that from your parents, and you want your kids to have those advantages, so A, you have to put in the work yourself. You have to sweat. And B, you have to.
I never felt that that was missing. In other words, as far as bringing something into the home, I never felt and don't feel that it's something missing, and a component that's missing, that there is not a tradition.
Because you don't know what it's like to have it. You don't know what it's like to have
it.
The fact is, I don't know, are your parents alive?
No.
There is no Bobby and Zaid. Your wife's parents alive?
No.
There is no Bobby and Zaid. So it's only ready cousins. Uncles and cousins, which you don't have to keep up with them that much anyway. Right? You know.
Right,
so I think they're not close. Uncles and cousins are not close.
No. We have a bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
This is an opportunity to makarav.
Yeah, okay, but they're not close. They won't take your kid out to the ball game.
You mean there's no threat to...
There's no alternative. They don't present... Your kid is not involved in their lives.
No.
So you don't really have any kind of threat from them. And so you just don't notice that not having the support from them, you don't see it missing. That's more subtle than when you actually have a threat. Bobby and Zaidi give nice gifts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Tati can't pay the bills, and Bobby and Zaidi send $50, you know. Tati's Hanukkah Geld is two nickels, and Bobby and Zaidi's Hanukkah Geld is $50. And, you know what I mean? Whatever. So, there are creates conflicts by the kids. That's the fact.
You're saying that the fact that they get Hanukkah Geld primarily from
if that, you know what I mean, and you look at your cousins and they're, they're successful lawyers, doctors, this one's in law school, and that one's in this school, and that, and this one's, you know what I mean, this one's going to Harvard, that one's going to Yale, and, you know, if your siblings and their children are a bunch of losers, you don't have that much competition. But I know, listen, I had kids tell me, I want to be like my uncle. I want to be like Tommy Clint. He's got money, he's got this, beautiful lifestyle, he's got a beautiful wife, kids, successful. I want to be like that. Nice house, nice car, swimming pool in the back. Gives a lot of stucco. Do a lot of charity. What? Guys told me that. You know what I mean? So what are you going to tell? What am I supposed to tell? You know, he obviously doesn't feel Ashreinu Matayv Chalkeinu. That was not conveyed in a deep and convincing manner that they walk around and see swimming pools, Mercedes, fair. No chassidus, without chassidus. It's all not.
It can be that I am naive and I don't realize that this is the undercurrent of their thinking in any case, and I'm just I'm blinded to it.
So how do you answer
even I who have to like watch my kid like when he's by my parents or my wife's parents, because you don't want any subtle undercurrents of it's not this to get through. So I stand ever on guard. but he has absolutely no problem with the concept of respecting the fact that there's scholarship in Torah and the areas in which they, you know, their Torah and Yiras Shamayim, is absolutely no, and appreciating that he's, you know, a link in its, you know, a link in a chain, and at the same time looking at them very compassionately. But Nebuch, they don't know Chassidus, and they don't know about the Rebbe.
So how do you deal with that?
What?
How do you deal with it?
It's exactly how I deal with it. That's it. Compassion.
How would one deal with that problem?
What?
How would one deal with that problem?
If it's already a problem.
Yeah. You know, when the kids say that, which is exactly what they say. I mean, you're quoting kids exactly. How do you answer that?
It's in talents. That's another whole topic, and it's almost 11:30. But it's a challenge. You have to, like everything else, you know, in undoing it, you have to. You can't. First of all, rational arguments is the stupidest way to go. You know, well, if you knew the problems they have, okay, I'll take their problems. You know, kids don't want to hear rational arguments. They're not as fulfilled and they're not as happy. You know. It's okay. I'll take it. You know, can't you? You know, rational arguments obviously not the way to go. The idea is to.